Mentality creates reality. I've seen it in my own life, and I believe in blessings because I am one.
Brandon Novak, a former professional skateboarder and TV star from shows like Viva La Bam and Jackass.
Yo, Novak. Oh, oh
my God. What was it like going from living on the streets, homeless, eating out of trash cans, to now you're a TV star?
In reality, I was never more fucked in my brain because I knew no matter how much I loved what I had at that moment, it was only temporary. And I always knew within that one of two things were going to happen, that either I was going to get sober or I was going to die in the process of trying to by an overdose.
He's also a former addict turned best-selling author and recovery advocate, using his story and platform to help others overcome addiction.
Sex, food, porn, gambling, social media, we all have these vices. And what it allows me to do is avoid me from having to look at me.
The magic that we're looking for is in the work we're avoiding.
Yeah, and I avoided that like the plague, man. I wanted no part of that.
What were the things that you did that you feel like were the most important to rebuilding yourself?
Was I stopped talking and I just started walking. And then ultimately what happened was my walk started to become my talk because my behaviors were changing.
After all the trials and tribulations today, do you feel enough?
I'd say...
You have a very interesting life, and like you had a lot of success early on, like way younger than most, right? By 14 years old, you were signed professional skateboarder. I think you were discovered by Stacy Peralta, you know, I don't know, 15, 16, you're in a Gatorade commercial with Michael Jordan, you know, representing the skaters. Like you had so much success early on. What do you attribute that to? Like, why did you have so much success so early? Was it just pure God-given talent? Was it your work ethic? What made you so incredible that young?
I believe I was blessed to find my God-given talent. You might be the best ping pong player in the world, but God might not see fit to put a paddle in your hand. Therefore, it just goes unrecognized. Life is all in retrospect and lived forward and learned backwards. I got my first skateboard at like 7. And prior to that, I could care less about skateboarding. Didn't look at it, didn't think about it, didn't even know it existed. I came from a pretty rough home life. My father was a Hell's Angel. He never held a job a day in his life. And he kind of taught me one thing, and that was if and when I went to prison, how to conduct myself. He was like around just enough to let us know that he was not around kind of guy. And my mother is an amazing woman, and she was the head of the household, and she raised us. She created stability, structure, security for us. And she's got her very first job at Mercy Hospital as a phlebotomist, drawing blood for $5 per vial. And she literally worked her way up the ladder to become a nuclear physicist on the board of that very same hospital. But in the interim, right, she had to fucking devote her life and every waking moment to climbing that ladder. So therefore, she didn't really want to leave me home with my father because needless to say, his behaviors were rather like erratic and sporadic and anything could happen at any moment. So my sister and brother kind of raised me, and my sister would live in Ocean City, Maryland every summer, and they would send me down there with her. And one day she said, hey, I'm going to the skate park to see this guy. She takes me to the skate park with her to see this guy. This guy is realistically probably just trying to bang my sister. So he gives me his skateboard. And literally, and the moment that board touched my hand, like I knew that this was what I was going to do for the rest of my life.
What was that feeling like?
It was like blinders on. I had tunnel vision. At that exact moment, schooling was not important. Plan B, a trait or an option, was not relevant. Like I knew that this was going to be the thing that I did despite any and all adverse consequences that were ever going to come my way. And I did it. And that skateboard did for me later on what I spent a lot of money and everything I cared about, which was drugs, took over with and shut this off. It just quieted my brain. And I did it. And through doing it, skateboarding raised me. It put a safeguard around me. It made me feel welcomed. It made me feel loved. It made me feel part of. And it taught me these core values in life that literally I've been blessed to build my structure on today, which is failure is not an option. the word no is unacceptable. You know, like skateboarders, we get a trick in our mind and we try it for days, weeks, months, years. And we're not like, oh, maybe. Like it is, we do it until we can't do it anymore. Mm. And that ideology and mentality carried over into later on, I'm sure we'll get into, but like my sobriety, my recovery, and just adversities as a whole in life. You know, it put me around good people. It got me out of my house, and it gave me this drive and this like
a purpose.
Yeah, yeah. That I didn't know was there or existed prior to.
So you just had this monomaniacal focus, blinders on skateboarding. There was no plan B since you were 7 years
old. Nothing mattered.
Nothing else mattered.
Women didn't matter, like riding a bike, picking up a baseball, like nothing mattered. All I thought about was skateboarding.
Was that in some way an escape from the chaos of your home where you could just dive into skating and just black out everything else?
Yeah, yeah. Because although, you know, I never blame my outcome on anyone else today. But at the time, as a child, before I knew better, I wanted to find some kind of joy. And my mother did the best that she could with my brother and sister to provide that. And they did on a lot of days. But I came from a household where you never knew what was going to happen when my father walked through the door.
So skateboarding was the predictable thing that you could count on?
Yeah, yeah.
It was your stability.
I could hang my hat on it.
You could hang your hat on
it. I could rely on it. I could depend on it.
It was in your control, too.
It was fucking everything that my father wasn't, if you think about it. And I don't want to make this like a poor me thing, because it's not.
But it was the context that laid the foundation for who you became.
It was the only thing that was really consistent in my life.
Yeah.
You know, the home that we slept in was not consistent, because we never knew like if we were going to have to run in the middle of the night.
Why was that?
Just because the way my father carried himself and the things that he did to us and to my mother.
There was a threat of violence all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Verbally, you know, sometimes physically, always mentally. Mm. And that, you know, I was kind of in a weird way being shifted and shaped and molded and almost groomed to become like the insane drug addict that I became later. Mm. Because ironically enough, everything that I did in my life was to prove a point of why I will never be him, right? Like everything that I excelled in, whether it was skateboarding, whether it was like, you know, the Jackass stuff, the writing of the book stuff, like it was to prove why I would never be that bum of a man. Mm. And then ironically enough, I made him look like a walk on the park in a Sunday morning, right? Like that's it was so like chump change. And
we end up manifesting our greatest fears.
Totally. And that's life, you know, and thank God that I went down the path that I did, because without that, I wouldn't be the child of God that I am today.
Yeah.
You know, powerful. I had to, it was a necessity for me to endure those rather uncomfortable and undesirable situations.
Yeah.
Because what I didn't know then that I know now, it was just me being divinely inconvenienced. Mm. That's all it is.
Mm. What was it like? Cause you're skating, you're in love with the process, you know, you love this as a craft, but then, you know, at 15, I believe you go professional.
Now I never turned pro while skating, which is the ironic thing about it. So I'm growing up in Baltimore, and I'm with another pro skater by the name of Bucky Lasik, who's a legend.
Legend.
And he took me under his wing, and he kind of recognized the talent and skill that I possessed. And he ultimately allowed me to enter into this amazing world. And I got sponsored by PAL, and I'm sponsored by Gatorade, and I'm doing this, you know, promotional stuff for Gatorade. And right as I'm designing my proto shape and pro model board, like I'm designing prototype shapes of what would work, a little off the tail, a little more on the nose, a little less concave. Right as I'm in that process, I decided that the logical thing would be to pursue heroin. Like literally, like the key to the castle is in the lock, and I'm opening the door, and I'm like, yeah, nah, I'm cool.
It's some form of self-sabotage, right? Like you have the most bright career in front of you. Everything's lining up. What do you think made you go the other way?
What I believe wholeheartedly is that I was genetically predisposed, right? Like my father was a drug addict and alcoholic, and his father was a drug addict and alcoholic. Mm. My mother, my brother, my sister, and brother and sister were by a different man, right? None of them had an issue. Right. So that paired with the upbringing that I was experiencing, you know, selling drugs with my father, doing drugs with my father, going on drug runs with him as a child, watching him conduct his business, the strip joints, you know, it was ultimate it was ultimately like creating a recipe for just that fucking disaster.
That's crazy. So all those
conditions. And I didn't understand what I didn't know at the time, which is how progressive, cunning, baffling, and insidious addiction is, right? It progressively gets worse.
What age did the addiction begin?
Around 16.
Around 16.
It kicked in. As I'm designing my pro model.
So you kind of leave skating behind, you go down this path of just constant drug abuse and all that. When did Jackass come about?
Jackass, I can't tell you the exact time or year, but how it happened, how it came to play was, I'm in a really bad way. I'm homeless, I'm in Baltimore, I'm shooting dope, and things just don't look good. My mother's kind of already slowly preparing for my death. I can't quite grasp this thing called recovery. And I avoid skateboarding like the plague, right? Like the woman that got away, the thing that hurt my heart the most. So anytime I see a skater, I cringe.
All that unused potential.
Yeah, like right? Haunting all you. These things that could have been. And now I'm like deep in the depths of despair of addiction, homeless, fucking, you know, eating out of trash cans, sleeping in abandoned houses. And so I avoid it like the fucking plague. But on very rare occasions when times get insanely tough, I'll stumble into this skate shop. And I'll ask them for some money. And I'm telling you, I really avoid that like at all costs.
But it's the worst feeling.
Yeah, this day was one of those really bad days. And I stumble into the skate shop and I said, hey, I give them the sad story and they want no part of it. And they're like, but hey, Bam was here yesterday and he was doing a demo with the skate shop and he asked if we saw you and we said rarely. And he left his number and he said, if you want to get clean and you want to move up to Pennsylvania with him, call him. So I take the number a few days later, I call him. He answers, and that night I'm on a Greyhound bus from Baltimore to Pennsylvania. And he allows me to move into his house, and he puts me on the TV show Viva La Bam. And the rules are that like I can drink, I can do blow, but I can't do any opiates or anything like that. Because, you know, when I'm doing blow, I'm fun. I can talk. I can socially interact. When I'm doing heroin or any kind of pills in that form, I fall asleep mid-conversation. I try to steal your wallet and your car. And shit like that. I'm not very controllable. Yeah. So, and then I total things and break stuff. And so, and he didn't understand addiction at the time. So that made sense to him. And I get that. So as long as I was able to abide by those rules, I could be on the show, I could have a credit card, I could have a car, and I could live in this really big house and just fucking produce when the cameras were on.
Yeah.
And that then led into Jackass.
And this whole time though, you're still constantly on drugs.
Yeah.
You kind of have to be for the kind of content in the
well, which is what really helped me in a weird way, because
interesting how
I was the guy that would do any stunt, and I mean like any stunt, you name it, like I'm in. And they're like, what the fuck is wrong with you? So if you weigh the scales of justice here, prior to me ending up in this position to become a household name, to make good money and really prolong my addiction, if you look at it, I'm homeless. I'm sleeping in a shooting gallery in West Baltimore. I'm like letting men blow me for heroin. Like I'm living on this animalistic level. So now you want me to like pull my pants down and sit on a waffle maker, like game on. You know what I mean? Like,
wow.
It was very simple justification.
You were already living in the most extreme pain.
Depths of poverty and like
poverty, pain, suffering, like, that this was like, oh, I'll break a few bones.
Dying would have been a luxury then, right? So then now I'm thrusted into this beautiful blessing of a position to do this. But if I put my hand up to do the stunts that nobody wants to do, odds are I'll break some bones. If I break some bones,
the doo-doo falls.
I'm going to the hospital and they're handing me a stack of scripts, which I am allowed to do.
Holy shit. Right? So you literally consciously were destroying yourself and doing the craziest stunts so you could just get your addiction.
Yeah,
met.
Totally.
That's insane.
And they'd be like, it's cool. And I'd actually get like a high five because I did well that day.
And they were reaffirming that addiction because they were giving you praise for doing the crazy shit that you knew would end you up there.
For sure.
Wow.
Not knowingly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like but none of us. You knew.
Yes, I did, but I was so disconnected from reality, I accepted to see it for what it was.
Yeah.
I lived in a really delusional world for a long time.
Yeah, I can get that. What was it like going from living on the streets homeless, eating out of trash cans to now you're a TV star.
Yeah.
Now you're like a household name. Like I was watching Jackass as a kid and I loved that show. I was like, these guys are awesome. You know?
Well, the thing is,
how is that like dealing with the fame and the notoriety for coming from that contrast?
And I'm not trying to give a shameless plug here, but this conversation isn't nearly long enough to like encompass the whole reality of it. And that book that I told you about, The Streets of Baltimore, I really get in the depths of the psychology of an addict and alcoholic. And
yeah.
And during those times where most people would be like, fuck, that's it. Like, and from outside perspectives, people thought that I really had a grasp on this thing called reality, which in itself is an acquired taste anyway. So,
sure, yeah.
So they, you know, people thought that I had done things that would equate to success, happiness, maybe even dream of doing. But in reality, I was never more fucked in my brain because I knew I was starting to understand the gravity and magnitude of my addiction and alcoholism. And no matter how much I loved what I had at that moment, it was only temporary because my addiction was absolutely going to make me make terrible decisions, which would then allow this whole deal to crumble. And then I'm back where I started, which is even worse because it's like, you know, imagine having the taste of a very blessed, beautiful life and the high life of things to then in the blink of an eye being thrusted back to Baltimore City with no money, trying to figure out where you're going to sleep tonight. Literally that quick. Because like,
is that what actually happened or was that a fear?
Oh, multiple times.
So they kicked you off the show.
Yeah. Off the show and out of the house. Because like, and rightfully so, if anyone was doing to me what I was doing then at that time, I'd fucking kill you, right? Like,
right.
And it wasn't that I was a bad person that did bad things. Quite the contrary, and this is for all addicts and alcoholics, we're really good people that are diagnosed with a terrible disease that makes us make terrible decisions. My mother, the most important person to me in this world, couldn't love anyone more in my life. But God forbid I wake up ill and I need $10 for a bag of heroin and she's standing between me and that bag, she must and will go. And I promise you, it's never personal, it's just business.
Wow.
Right, like that's kind of the depths that addiction takes me to.
Wow.
So like, I knew that like this was amazing. If I took advantage of the opportunity, my future could be limitless and the sky is the limit. But I also knew that like I was going to continue to steal. I was going to continue to lie. I was going to continue to overdose. I was going to continue to like not deliver what I am hired to do. And that's what is the hardest. So therefore, like, you know, I'd wake up sometimes and like they'd go through my bags and they'd find needles and they'd find fuck. I'd try to deliver a line and I'm just falling asleep in it. And Bam would get so furious. He's like, get the fuck out. Go home. Go back to Baltimore. And home, there was no home. I didn't have an apartment waiting. Like I had burnt my bridges. Remember, he put me on a Greyhound and brought me while I was homeless. So my mother had like served a restraining on me years ago, restraining order, just to have me removed from her home. So it's just then now I'm going back and I'm trying to couch surf off of like the guy that I was. Like,
right.
Oh, you know, yeah, I'm flying out next week. All these. And that's why my book is called Dream Seller, because that's how I kind
of selling some bullshit
over and over,
over and over
just to acquire like $10 or a little bit of hope or trust or a sofa to sleep on or a car to drive or, you know, a woman to shack up with.
Right.
You know, that was kind of my MO.
Yeah.
So that was really tough because like when most people would be like, wow. And it was great. It was some of the best times I've had in my life were getting loaded, partying and fucking off with the fellas and private jets here and the suites in Vegas, you know, the whole deal. But unfortunately, the party that I loved and lived in for so long at the end, like no longer was a party and turned into like a full-blown hostage negotiation that I was not allowed to leave. And that's the reality for me.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's just fucking easier for me to stay sober.
Well, it's interesting because like your big break, you think, okay, this is your opportunity to finally get out of the circumstances you were in. But you just took the prison that you were in on the streets and took that into the limelight where it's even expanded further. And you're playing the character on steroids now.
Legit.
Right? You have to perform and do the craziest shit to get love, to get this fast food love from the world. And as you're getting more famous, as you're getting bigger and bigger, you're getting further and further away from yourself.
It's so funny you say that, and a lot of people don't recognize it, but the character that I was playing is literally a junkie's dream, right? The more outrageous my behaviors are, the more outlandish my antics become, the higher the ratings go, mm-hmm. the more in demand I become, the more money I make, the more dope I can shoot. And it's just a fucking, it's a hamster wheel over and over and over that ultimately prolongs any kind of recovery. Right?
Yeah.
It allows me to deflect, justify, and minimize the severity of my addiction. So I can just continue to fucking, you know, people see me and they're like, oh shit, what's up, Novak? And they hand me a bag of coke or hand me some pills. You know, they know that I am that drug addict character that will do anything with anyone wherever for however long we can do it. So I use that to my benefit to continue to just get high. And right. and ironically enough, the way that it's like it's so beautiful looking back, and I always say thank God, God is God and I'm not God, because I will fuck that job up miserably. But I was really being shaped and molded to this place where I was going to use that base that I built and followers that I've been blessed with to turn into a vessel or a conduit for people who may want help. Right?
And that's how it all played out.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the worse I got, the bigger the blessing was about to become.
So how,
once the pain became great enough.
Once the pain became great enough. Because
yeah.
I believe you went to rehab 13 times.
Yeah, totally.
That's a quite a few times, yeah. right? So talk to me about this process now. You know, you're a big star now. You've had all the notoriety you want. You've had a lot of success, but you're still battling the same demons. You're in and out of rehab. Yeah. It's just this almost hopeless fight at some
Legit.
Point. You're like, I'm just on a treadmill. I don't know how the fuck to get off this thing. The 13th rehab, what was it that clicked? What was the inflection point that had you go sober for good?
I literally become that, like, that hopeless cause, right? I go to a 12-step fellowship. And in there, they talk about this this case that is inconstitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves or others, or is a hopeless situation. And that's what I was doing. It didn't matter if I could get honest with you. I just couldn't get honest with the most important person in the equation, which was me, right? Because I have this alcoholic brain that lies to me in my own voice and always makes me believe the unbelievable. Right. And and as an addict or an alcoholic, the job of that disease is to deflect, justify, and minimize the severity of the situation at hand. It keeps me very disconnected from reality. And long enough with that disconnection, the abnormal becomes the normal. So you and I, we stare at this painting and we see two completely different fucking things in the same room, same seat, two totally different perspectives.
You're like, how can I pawn that for dope?
Yeah, I'm like, well, I already figured out like who I need to call and what street corner I need to meet them on, and like who did it and who's gonna give me the most and how far is that from the fucking dope boys?
Everything to feed the addiction.
Yeah, so what I do, who I do it with, and where we do it all revolves around the getting and using and finding ways and means to just acquire one more, because that's what my brain tells me, right? I just need one more. And then tomorrow we're going to get right.
Yeah.
And I believe when I say like tomorrow's the day, I believe it.
How many times did you say that?
I've lost count, but then, you know, tomorrow's going to be the day. I just got to get right now. And I get right now. And then I wake up tomorrow and I repeat yesterday's actions, and I'm stuck in Groundhog's Day for 21 years, right? So now I have this brain that lies to me. So it's not like your voice appears in my brain and you're like, oh, Novak, you've been sober 10 years, you can have a glass of wine. And I'm like, fuck you, stranger danger. It's my voice in my head that tells me, you've been sober over 10 years. Everything that brought you into recovery, right? The lack of finance, the lack of romance, the lack of money, the lack of opportunity, the lack of business, I have in abundance. And so those very same things that created the pain, which provided the willingness to do what I had never done, which was reach out and ask for help, if I'm not careful, can be the very same things that take me back out, because my brain will tell me, you're different. Life is different. You've acquired the knowledge. Ignorance is no longer bliss, right? Like, you can overcome these obstacles. You can catch it before it gets that bad. You're going to $1,000 dinner tonight. Why wouldn't you have a glass of wine with it? Like, the people in my life today have never really even seen me high. My life is really different. And so honestly, the truth of the matter is, the longer I stay sober, the more dangerous it becomes. it's easy for me to fucking lock in, you know, 10 days sober. I'm fresh out of detox. I'm still shaking. I have a blanket wrapped around me and I can't sleep because the pain is still great enough.
Yeah, that makes sense. But when things are good again, that's when the devil comes back.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
But how did you, you're 10 years sober now.
Yeah.
Why the 13th trip to rehab? What was the moment?
It's funny that you ask that. I this last time I went to rehab and I remember when we were filming Viva La Bam and we'd finish filming and the cast and the crew, we'd all go to the pub and we'd drink. And I, a lot of days, would go to like an AA meeting first. And then I would go meet everyone at the pub. And I remember Bam saying to me, he's like, what the fuck's wrong with you? You like, we finish filming for the day, you go to an AA meeting and then you come get fucked up with us. Huh. And I always knew within that one of two things were going to happen because I'm an intelligent individual. I have the wherewithal to understand that like, living on the streets with a needle hanging out of my arm is not the right way to go. That either I was going to get sober or I was going to die in the process of trying to by an overdose, right? Like I wasn't happy with just being a fucking drug addict, alcoholic the rest of my life. Like I knew that that wasn't what it was for. I end up going to that last treatment center and I get out, number 13, and I get out and I have about 3 or 4 months sober right now. And people are like, whoa, he actually like really might do this. Like this might be something that sticks. And I see Bam and he goes, why the fuck treatment center number 13? He's like, why not 12, 10, 9, 6, 4, 3, 2, 1? Why 13? He said, what, did you have like a meeting with God? And I didn't tell him because he wasn't in the place to grasp it. But in my mind, I'm like, yeah, I actually did. Mm-hmm. I did. And I did. And what happened was nothing changed from treatment center number 1 to number 13. The information or rhetoric that they delivered to me was just recycled. It came at different places by different faces and different voices. Mm. What changed was me. I matured. I was evolving. I had failed so many times that how I got to where I'm at today is simply processed through elimination, but backwards. Meaning that I failed so miserably bad for so long at everything I tried. Ultimately, the last thing I tried was the first thing that worked. And it was the thing that they had been suggesting the whole time.
Which was?
Simply fucking the common denominator in my problems are me.
Yes.
If I get the fuck out of my way, I might stand a chance. I can't do this thing alone. He can. So let him. The drinking and the drugging was not my problem at all. And the longer that I thought that it was my problem that was causing my demise, the more I was going to continue to fail.
What was the root of the problem?
Exactly. I was fighting the wrong opponent, which is why I continued to lose for so fucking long. I was ignorant to the reality of my situation because I refused to give my addiction the time, attention, and respect it deserved. Because I was too smart for my own fucking good.
Right.
Which is the problem with most addicts now. Actually, the majority, I'd say 99.9% of us, is we don't get to where we're at because we took the short bus to school. Mm. Quite the contrary. I got to where I was at because I was too smart for my own fucking good. Mm. And I would land in a seat in a treatment center that literally had the ability to save my life. And I'd outthink myself right out of it. I'd see me do it more times than I cared to remember. So ultimately at the end, my higher power, you know, I'm easily distracted. I'm an accessories whore. I'm easily distracted by money, property, prestige, and pussy get me every time. Always diverts me from my primary purpose, which is simply to just make it through another day sober, be a really good human being, and help out my brothers and sisters, which are God's children, right? But God damn it, let a fat ass, let a fucking nice car or a big paycheck pass me, and I'm...
The animal crazies come back, totally. Right? And they just overcharge you and take you out of your purpose.
For sure, and yeah. I recognize that now. Like, ignorance is no longer bliss, and so now I can't really stay stuck on stupid as long as I'd like to.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I know.
Yeah, but you said something like, I'm curious, were the other rehab stints, did you develop a connection with God at any of those, or was it the 13th one where like you actually surrendered and started building this faith?
So that's where this comes into play, right? Knowing that I'm easily distracted by outside activities, I never give my addiction the respect or time it deserves. My higher power saw fit to remove me from every distraction. So I walk into that 13th treatment center. Literally all that I own to my name is 8 scarves, 2 jackets, 3 socks, one stick of deodorant. It fits into this bag that doubles as my pillow because I'm like a homeless dope fiend. A needle, a spoon, and a restraining order. And a passport. I had a passport. I was able to hold on to a passport. But that's all that I had.
Yeah.
Everyone, and I mean everyone in my life, felt that it was the best to love me from a distance. No one was looking for me. No one was waiting on me. Everyone just said, you know, when we want to know how you're doing.
Yeah.
My mother had bought me a plot at this point. People had taken life insurance policies out on me.
No way.
I was that hopeless case that was incapable of being honest with myself or others. Therefore, people weren't saying if he's going to die, but like when. People were projecting that outcome, including myself. And I end up in this facility and I don't want to be there, but I have nowhere else to go. Right? I don't want to do this AA 12 step shit, but they're the only fucking weirdos that are welcoming me. They're the only ones that are happy to see me. And to make matters worse, they're not even giving me $10. So like by force or by choice, I'm stuck with these fucking weird cult-like people. And I'm like, you know what? I have nothing but time, right? Therefore, let's do it. I want to kill myself. I want to fucking die so bad, but I'm just like terrified to hurt myself in the process. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I've been terrible at suicide for a long time because I kept waking up. So I'm like, you know what? Let's just run it. Let's run it. And I didn't know if I was going to stay sober. I really didn't. I did not know if I was going to stay sober. What I did know is I just wanted the pain to stop. So now I'm starting to give it the attention and respect it deserves. I'm starting to acquire some information and knowledge. And they say, hey, Mr. Novak, you know the heroin that you continue to stick into your arm every day, the Xanax that you eat, the methadone that you swallow, the cocaine that you sniff, that's not your problem. And I'm like, what the fuck do you mean? I've given it everything. I've given it my career. I've given it my homes. I've given it my women. I give it my sexuality. I give it whatever it asks for. And they're like, yeah, you're a fucking idiot. That is not the problem. That's actually the solution. It's the answer. Mm. It's the right thing in the situation. It's the thing that makes you whole. It's not the problem. It's the solution. The problem is your thinking, your attitude, and your behavior. If you take this glass of wine and you just sit it down and you go to a treatment center for 30 days, yes, you've removed it from your life for 30 days, but you get out of treatment and you just pick it back up. Of course, it's not a question of if, but when you pick it back up, because all you've done is sit it down, meaning the same addict, the same alcoholic will drink or drug again because you have not worked on the problem, which is the thinking. Mm-hmm. Right, so I had to go to a place that created a big enough gap between me and the last needle that I shot into my arm to take a look at my life to see it for what it really was and work on the problem. Mm-hmm. Right, because like
the magic that we're looking for is in the work we're avoiding.
Yeah, every fucking and I avoided that like the plague, man. I wanted no part of that.
Right,
it didn't fit into my timeline or my narrative. I was a busy man. I had places to go, people to see, women to fuck, and because of that, the answer continued to be a needle in my arm.
Mm.
So if drugs are the answer, what the fuck is the question?
Yeah, what's the void you're
filling? Yeah. So then I start to like learn and understand the reality of my situation. I see that, whoa, no wonder I keep getting beat so bad by my addiction, because I refuse to give it the respect it deserves.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you're fighting Mike Tyson in his prime, if you're going to fight Mike Tyson in his prime, you're not just gonna get a trainer and work out on Sunday mornings for 2 hours. You are going to eat, breathe, sleep, and live, right, that training to endure 12 rounds with the biggest beast in the world. And that's kind of the same thing with recovery or addiction.
You were too casual with it.
Yeah, maybe I'd show up for a meeting once a week if like some fucking really beautiful women would be there, or if it fit the time that I woke up. Mm. I was not treating it like this is life or death.
Mm. And it was the whole time.
The whole time.
So would you say like with addiction, you know, I feel like using drugs, and people do this on micro levels that aren't as extreme all the time. We numb ourselves with distractions, with our phones, with substances. But I feel like the substances we use are because of a lack of substance within us.
Absolutely.
Right? So the lack of substance in our life, of purpose, of health, of core good relationships, that lack of substance creates this void, this vacuum. And then that vacuum creates so much pain that we look for things to numb that pain. Right. And so until we address that void within ourselves, we're always going to look for these fast food solutions that aren't good for us to take that away.
A temporary solution for a permanent problem, a Band-Aid on a gunshot, if you will.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, for years, I was filling this internal void with an external solution.
Yes.
Right. And it just never like held. It didn't stand the test of time, because ultimately what I was doing, and we all have our vices, right? Like don't fucking corner me into this place where, oh, I'm not an addict, I'm not an alcoholic, there's nothing for me to see or hear here. The sex, food, porn, gambling, you know, dieting, working out, social media, we all have these vices.
Yes.
And that's just the solution. It's the behaviors. And what it allows me to do is avoid me from having to look at me. That's really what it is.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting too is, like, I believe that we're all addicts. If you look at everything
for sure
underneath, why do humans pursue what they pursue? Mm-hmm. It's all for an emotional payoff. It's for chemicals.
And an instant gratification.
We want dopamine, we want serotonin, and we want oxytocin.
And I need it like yesterday.
Yeah, and then some people are like, you know what? What's the fastest path? I just need it now.
Yeah.
As you rebuild your life and you build it in a healthy, sustainable way where you have fulfillment and joy and peace, you're finding things in life that we're still addicted to that dopamine, that oxytocin, but you're using that towards healthy, productive goals. You're in the right relationships that give you safety, love, sure, and that oxytocin that actually rejuvenates you. And so we're all addicted to the same chemicals. We all want the same end state emotions, but we just get lost on these paths trying to find these shortcuts to them because we don't know how to get them.
Yeah. And what are the intentions behind the behaviors?
That's a great point.
Like, what are my intentions is what it comes down to. So where I get to today, because again, the longer I'm sober, the more successful I've been blessed to be, and the more relationships and connections I have,
the things.
Ultimately, I need to remind myself to just think less and do more.
Mm.
I just need to think less and do more, because I'll start thinking that I am the one that should take credit for these amazing things that are happening in my life, right? And now the ego is in full effect. And all ego for me is just easing God out. And then Brandon becomes Brandon's God.
Easing God out.
Yeah, yeah. And
ego.
And that's what recovery is, right? Because the core of my disease is that I'm selfish and I'm self-centered. Meaning that everything in my life is me. And 2 seconds for you, but only if it's gonna benefit me. Right? It's all transactional, and it has to benefit the way that I feel and the outcomes that I'm projecting that I deserve. I. The definition of recovery is just to think a little bit less about me and a little bit more about you.
Yeah.
Like, the opposite of addiction is connection. Therefore, community, like family is vital. I can't do this alone. So now the longer I stay sober, the more successful I've been blessed to be, the more that I think that I'll know on any given day, which means I'm projecting outcomes for you. Right now, I've just placed an expectation on you. All I've done in placing this expectation on you is set myself up for an unfulfilled resentment, because you will not live up to my expectations. I don't even live up to my own fucking expectations. So the moment that you do what I don't think you should do, I'm now immediately resentful at you. And in my program, resentments are the number one offender that will take an addict or an alcoholic to a drink or a drug.
I like the distinction we made here with ego and God.
Yeah.
I believe this is the dichotomy of life.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're in our egos, everything is about us.
Mm-hmm.
We feel separate.
Us meaning me.
Yeah, you.
There is no us. As individuals, it's fucking me.
It's about I, me.
It's me.
But that's the thing is, when we're in our ego, we feel separate.
Yes.
We're disconnected from a higher power.
100%.
We're disconnected from others because we're resenting them.
Yeah.
We're judging them.
Yeah. And I'm not getting what I want. I don't believe you respect me as I should be respected.
Absolutely. And so we're completely lost in our own worlds where we're disconnected from the truth.
Yes.
That we are all connected and that we're not alone. And that feeling of loneliness is so deeply penetrating to the soul. It's you feel like it's hopeless. But you stay there because you're in the ego. And I think everyone goes through different journeys on the spiritual route. I think there's a lot of paths to God.
For sure.
Right? There's different religions. There's individual spiritual paths. There's going through immense suffering, which forces you to surrender.
I believe God is everything.
Yes.
I believe God is a bag of heroin. People are saying, what the fuck is wrong with
you? Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, but without me going to the places that I went via drugs and alcohol, I would not be the child of God that I am today.
Well, God presented you with people and circumstances to help you evolve into the truth, into the higher realization. 100%. That you are God. You are connected to God and all of his children. And
I am his son.
And you are a son, yeah. And so I'm curious, how does that, because I think some people listening that, you know, have gone down their spiritual path are like, yes, I get it. And some people are listening like,
for sure,
God is like, what the hell is God? Like, totally. What is, you know, this might not connect with them, but on a practical level.
And the funny thing is, humanity is the only fucking species that has the audacity to think that we understand what God's will is.
It's true.
It's so fucking great and powerful. And then look, to you listeners, this is just my opinion. And you're talking to a guy that did not graduate high school, that got his GED in the penitentiary, right? Like, I'm not professing to be this fucking scholarly, you know, knowledgeable individual. No. I'm just the guy that's had a few experiences that knows what I believe works best for me today, but tomorrow that could completely change.
Yeah.
Depending on what God presents to me. But I practice a spirituality that where's my spirituality if I judge your spirituality?
Straight up.
I was in jail and I fasted with the Muslims. I've went to Greece and been baptized by these Greek monks, at Mount Athos, which is like the holy mountain. I lived there for 2 weeks and just fucking chanted with the Gregorian monks. I'm down for whatever, man. I need all the help I can get.
I love, you know, I hope that everyone finds God in this world. I hope that everyone does find that. But the funny part about religion, I think for me, is, you know, you've got Buddhists, you've got Christians, you've got Muslims, whatever it may be. We're all trying to go to the same destination, which is to arrive with God.
Yes.
But someone's in a Toyota, someone's in a Nissan, someone's in a Ferrari, and we're talking about wheels and paint jobs.
Yeah.
We're comparing in language, but can only be expressed in energy.
Yeah.
And I don't care what vessel you achieve the relationship with God through, but you can tell when someone has it or not.
For sure.
And so who cares about who was the prophet who took down the commandments? That doesn't matter. It's like, are you connected to your higher creator, and are you living a life that is creating a beautiful existence for yourself and others?
And you know, it's all perspective. I couldn't agree with everything you said anymore. And the beautiful thing about that is everything is perspective, right? And we are all God's children, brothers and sisters. And I need the ones that are atheists, the ones that don't believe, the ones that say, fuck God, he fucked me. Those are equally as important as they are to my brothers and sisters who I walk this journey with. And the reason why is because I need thieves. I need liars. I need killers to prove to me why I don't want to be a thief or a liar or a killer, right? It's like, what's love without sadness? What's happiness without joy? What's rain without sunshine? I need those people to like fucking cut me off and give me the finger and say, fuck you, go kill yourself. So I can like reiterate to myself, like, thank God I'm not like in that place. And it kind of pushes me to be a better human being, right?
What were some of the things you did? Because, you know, whether people are struggling with real deep addiction, or they're just, you know, struggling with self-sabotaging vices that are preventing them from stepping into their full power, you know, as someone, because, you know, being sober is the beginning, right? Yeah. It's now you have a more or less a bit of a blank slate where you can create from that place now, because you're able
which is really difficult to navigate. Because
right, but
now,
how do you rebuild yourself?
And I'm newly sober. And right in the beginning, I got high to change the way I felt, right? I got high because I like the effect produced from drinks or drugs. And now I'm sober, and I'm full with the things that we all have the most of and know the least about, which are fucking emotions, right? Now, how do I endure that? Feeling like a stranger in my own skin, trying to figure out who the fuck let me in and why, without reverting back to what I always know brings peace and comfort, a drink or a drug.
Yeah, what were some of the tactical things that you did? Maybe some mindset things that you had to shift, some habits, environment changes. Like, what were the things that you did that you feel like were the most important to rebuilding yourself?
And this is all retrospect. Now it's very clear for me to see, but early on in the beginning stages, I talked less, right? Because I would usually get sober and I would scream it from the fucking rooftop, and I'd call all my loved ones and say, this is it. I'm going to be this man. I'm going to be this son. I'm going to be this employee. I'm going to be this husband, you know, and I'm never going to drink. I'm never going to drug again. And I would always repeat those behaviors. So this last time, for the first time, right, the last thing I tried, first thing that worked was I stopped talking and I just started walking. And then ultimately what happened was my walk started to become my talk, because my behaviors were changing. When my behaviors were changing, the outcomes were changing. And then when the outcomes were changing, the beliefs were changing, right? I couldn't think my way into a better way of life because remember, the thinking is the problem. I didn't understand that. So I had to surround myself with like-minded people, right? Power in numbers. Opposite of addiction is connection. I had to surround myself with like-minded people that genuinely had my best interest at heart. I had a sponsor. I had a mentor. I was working the 12 steps. I was attending 12-step meetings. And I really submerged myself in the culture. And in doing that, all of a sudden, the pain started to lessen, right? My perspective on what I thought was a dark, bleak life that was never going to get any better started to become a little brighter. And then I started to live this life that I love so much that I believe staying sober was worth, right? So it all happened backwards. The way that I was wired, the way that I lived, the way that I conducted business prior to sobriety was to fight, was to win. To fight was to survive. To fight was to make it through another fucking day. And then I walked into sobriety. I was blessed with this new life. And they told me to fight is to lose. To fight is to die. To fight is to relapse. So at that very moment, I realized I had to admit complete defeat in order to secure the ultimate victory. Which was the exact opposite approach that I had fucking, you know, lived my life by for 20 years.
Wow.
It was a mind fuck.
That's powerful. Something I am pulling from this reading between the lines too is, you know, you had great friends before that loved you, I'm sure.
Yes.
But they were enabling the same behaviors. So you're very much a product of the environment you were in. In sobriety, you have a new group of friends because you can't go back to that lifestyle. But I see a big contrast because you had to perform so much. You had to be this very curated character to get love and be accepted by people. Like if you gotta do the craziest stunts, do the most drugs, be the craziest version of you. Now you're surrounded by a group of people that actually wanna take care of your soul. They actually just love you for you, right? Where you don't have to pretend, you don't have to perform, like we just love you.
Yeah.
And that true comfort and love and depth, I think is what we're all craving, right? And by surrounding yourself with that people, you no longer had to be this character to survive. Now it was okay to be yourself.
Which, if we go back to the beginning, what we started talking about when we started this talk is that's all that I wanted was security and stability. That's all that I ever wanted.
Oh my gosh.
That's all that I was in search of. I wanted to know what house I was going to be in next week, next month. I wanted to know that I was going to sleep in a bed with clean sheets and a pillow. And I wanted to know like that I was going to open the same refrigerator for the next month. You know, and those were things that I hadn't had in my life for quite some time. Because I was so disconnected from this thing called reality.
Wow.
And then ultimately, I ended up moving into a sober living house after I completed a 90-day treatment center. And and they got me a job washing dishes for $6 an hour. And I had heard about that word humility, but I had never experienced or practiced it. Mm. And at the time when I was given this job, my alcoholic brain was telling me that at the very least, I should have been the president of the United States. At the very least, not busting suds at a diner for $6 an hour under the table after being a skater, being in movies and books that were like extremely successful. What I didn't know then that I know now is that job was like one of the biggest foundational blocks in my life. And it taught me how to live life. Mm-hmm. And I credit largely in part who I am today because of that job that I believe was so fucking beneath me.
Do you feel today, going through all this, after all the trials and tribulations, today, if you answer honestly, do you feel enough?
I'd say 4 days out of the week I do. Mm. And that's a lot fucking better than it was.
I love it.
Straight up, man. Because on any given day, I wake up in one of two modes. Don't you know who the fuck I am? Or please God, don't ask me who I am.
Yeah, the ego says two things. I am the goat, and am I even worthy of love?
Legit.
It's such a stark contrast, right? It's like,
and that's why I start my day on my knees every morning.
Yes,
right? And I end my day on my knees. And the only thing that like removes me from that really purgatory, scary place to live in, is my connection with my higher power. And that is everything to me. I've done none of this. I take no credit for any of it. I simply was blessed to be put in a position to play a very small part in a much bigger picture.
It's a beautiful journey, dude, because I look at life a lot of times like a slingshot. And the further you're pulled back, you have more kinetic energy, the further you can launch forward if you learn to alchemize those tribulations into positive things. And all these things were building your character, and God put you through hell so that you could have this capacity for light to then become a vessel for his message.
And thank God I had no idea what the plan was, because I would have fucked it up.
That's a good
point. You know what I mean? Like, mark my words. That's what I do. Left to my own devices, I will put this whole beautiful place into a needle and stick it right in my arm. That's just the way that I was wired. And and that's the definition of a spiritual experience. Mm. The definition of a spiritual experience is simply a psychic change, right? Meaning that I, Brandon Novak, with over 10 years sober, no longer look, think, act, but more importantly, react the way that I did when I walked into that 13th inpatient treatment center wondering if I was going to make it through the night. And that's why I've been able to consistently show up. It's easy to show up when times are great, money's overflowing from the accounts, women are swinging from the chandeliers. Like, that's just what I do. I show up. But let me show up when my mother has to go to rehab, when my nephew relapses, when I have to split away from business partners, when I just don't know if I can take another phone call today, and everything in me says just don't. Like, that's when you show up, right? That's when it matters. That's where God's most at work. And when I say God, I don't want to discourage anybody out there, like, fuck, because God's a heavy word. I don't know what God is. I have no clue if it's a man in the sky with a robe and a beard, or the beach or the ocean. I just know that it's not me. It's a power greater than myself that does for me what I was incapable of doing for myself for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, so I like to keep it simple.
I like that a lot, man. Everyone listening, no matter what stage of life they're in, they wanna live a more fulfilling, joyful life. Right? Everyone wants that. Mm-hmm. And you've had to go through some pretty big battles to figure out how to do that for yourself, right? So if you had to leave a message for everyone listening to help them just live a more fulfilling, lasting, happy life, what would you want to share with them?
Man, it's so easy. I think that's why we miss it. And it's just to think less and do more. Because I outthink myself out of doing anything good for myself or others. Mm. Because like, it might inconvenience my day, right? It might not fit into my narrative of what I think the projected outcome should look like. Mm-hmm. I fuck it up. Just be kind to others. Do something good for someone. Don't overcomplicate a simple process.
That's a damn good answer, man. Well, dude, I appreciate it. Thank you for being so fucking raw and honest.
This was fun, man.
This is a really good conversation that I think people resonate with, but yeah, it's incredible, man. It's kind of a stamp on the thing is you can literally go through hell. It doesn't matter what conditions you were brought up in. Doesn't matter how many L's you've taken in life or the excruciating pain or the shame, guilt, anything you might carry around. You can always recreate yourself. You can always be redeemed. And as soon as you're willing to commit to that life that you want, as soon as you're willing to surrender and realize you can't do it alone, and you're willing to put everything you have into creating that, you can do and be anything you want in this life, and it's never too late. And that, I think your story is just a really inspiring example of that.
1,000,000%, right? Like, literally, if I wanted to become a brain surgeon, I could become a brain surgeon for a fact, for an absolute fact. I don't doubt that in any part of my body. I just have to appropriate and delegate the time and give it like anything is possible.
Yeah.
Mentality creates reality. Straight up, like, for a fact. I've seen it in my own life, and I believe in blessings because I am one, right? Like, so you can't tell me, and the majority of the people that I walk with can also share the same testament, right? And so it's like, yeah, I know that anything's possible provided I just stay out of my way. And, you know, the funny thing about it is I loved drugs and alcohol so much. I still love them so much. The only difference is today I don't do them. I'm still just as submerged with them, but I'm provided like a beautiful life from them. Right? My poison has become my medicine. And I now like literally have devoted my life to helping people who are where I once was. Beautiful. So if anyone out there has any kind of issue with drugs or alcohol, call me directly at 610-314-6747. I have two facilities that I'm at every day. I run lectures at both of those programs, and I have a handful of sober livings that I'm deeply involved in. I am passionate about because I fucking believe in it, and I can see the amazing things that can come from it, provided you just kind of change your perspective on it.